We've ended last week really talking about fear, the fear of God, and which has been very good and very much on my mind. And you know, I'm sure it's something you can sense in all of our hearts. But it's easy not to fear God the way we would want to. So funny, before you're saved, you don't even care to. When you become born again, you want to, but he doesn't always have the place you would like him to have. It's like, you know, it's like the king, you walk him into the city, and then you look for every way to get him out. And I think at times God can be a lot like that, you know. At least I sense it on a daily basis. Just that old sin nature, you know what I mean? If we could get rid of the rebels in the city, that would be our old sin nature. Then I think it would be easier. So, but just, you know, letting God have his place, letting him in all things have it, to have preeminence. That's an interesting thing. But I just was also thinking that, what is that? Coffee's going to continue to do that. You know, I was thinking in general, and it got me thinking, is that something we started on Tuesday? What causes, not just the proper fear of God, but we've been talking about joy and sorrow, but that those proper emotions. So we began talking on Tuesday, but over what the right things that cause good emotions. And we talked about, specifically on Tuesday, a couple of things. We talked about right faith, and that we have a good, a great response to God emotionally and to each other because of right faith. And just faith in God, not faith in a situation, not faith in something. And just a little something thinking about on the way here, that it's not the right circumstances that, you know, make great emotions. But that's unfortunately the lie that we kind of live in. That if my circumstances were good, then my response would be good. If things went this way, then this would be better. If they only treated me this way, then I would have a better response. It's innate in us to have the idea of right circumstances mean right emotions, but really it's right meditation. That would equal right emotions. And the right faith, which is meditation on not faith in the situation or faith in people, but faith in God. And then secondly, we said right hope. Right, like the right hope. Like I'm not hoping in something that, you know, that is not enduring. And we were speaking of Hebrews 10:34, but something that's going to happen. It's most certainly going to happen. It's true. And it's very much there. So we said the right faith, the right hope, and we also said one more, right? The right message. Right, the gospel message. It's a wrong message. There is no right emotions. There are plenty of people, unhappy people, who are living in wrong doctrine. And it's kind of like wondering why I can't get in the door with the wrong key. And I keep applying the wrong key. And it's kind of like, why am I not getting, you know, people do this the right thing out of my workout when I'm doing the exercise wrong? And it's not so much, you know, anything else except the wrong exercise. I can have the wrong message, and then, of course, it will not ultimately, it doesn't open the door to all of the things that God has for me, because it's the wrong message. It condemns me. It tells me of a God that will forsake me. It tells me of it leads me into further condemnation. I never have confidence with God with the wrong message, right? So therefore my emotions are never correct in that respect. So right meditation, and I was just thinking a lot, and I think I'm going to next week maybe touch on this idea, though, and that's the idea of, which is this last point, and that is right works. And I was thinking of, I've been thinking a lot about this, enough that it's going to affect this season for me. But right works equal right emotions. And it's interesting because Philippians 4 talks about really a lot of this, about what our meditation should be and what are the things that we are to, you know, to think on. And maybe we could, you know, look at that. Philippians 4 really really chapter verse 1 says so much to us, believe it or not, for what we're talking about. Therefore, my brethren, dearly beloved and longed for, my joy and crown, stand fast in the Lord, my dearly, so stand fast in the Lord, my dearly beloved. And we're going to come back to this, but he hits in verse 4 that rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. And we were saying that, you know, you can't just say, you know, be joyful or what have you. There's something that leads to that. You know, 2 + 2, it does equal 4. Something leads to that. That's why we know that you don't get great emotions. You don't have a you don't have the proper way of thinking about things without the right approach. And I was thinking, you know, Christ. The Bible. Why do we appreciate Christ so much? And the Bible says why? Because he was touched with the feelings of our infirmities. And it was, you know, if someone was only joy around me, I don't think it would work. I mean, not just around me, but that was only their only that defined their life. That'd be great. I mean, great that they're around, but it wouldn't be enough for me because my life is. It's more. It's filled with more than that. I also have sorrow, and there is something about the person who, you know, is able to console me and who is able to know that, you know, what I've who goes through something whose heart itself is broken. And one thing we know is Christ's heart was broken. So we have joy, we have sorrow. That Christ went through anger. When he's in the temple, you know, that there is a righteous anger. You know, it's not so much that mine is maybe all the time, or, you know, as we're growing, one might even say it isn't very often. But the fact that it could be, that I know that he understands, that there's a perfection about all of the emotions that Christ went through, but that he actually had them. And it's very meaningful. It's very meaningful, but I want a Christ that has all of those things. I don't want a Christ that would come and then, you know, that was the God, if very much that was feared in the Old Testament, was the one that was on the Mount Sinai. And they did not see that God as having very many emotions, but really he was to be feared, and their fear had torment. And they obeyed him and knew that he would bless them, but not in a relationship way. More or less that if you do the following things, then you'll have your paycheck at the end of the week. There was no personal relationship. There was no understanding that the same God who could express his anger to the Egyptians could express his love to them. And they never understood that. And they never understood or really got to know the many sides, if you will, of God. Which is which his expression. That's why Christ coming to the earth, he was the express image of God. So finally, man got to actually see God in all of his divinity. If he were in humanity, we finally got to see it and all of his emotions and what have you. And people flocked to it. The same God that they ran from in the mountains. of Sinai and the Mount of Sinai and said, we want Moses to speak to us, is the same God in the form of man that they would flock to because he had compassion on them. Because they could look in his eyes and tell that he was for real and he really cared for them. That they would follow him from town to town, that he would feed them, that he couldn't, they knew he couldn't look, that they would just touch him and they expected to be healed. But they never wanted to touch that mountain, and God even told them, tell him not to come near me. Even if an animal comes near, it's going to die. So there is that one, and then there's the other, where we saw this other side of Christ, and we saw the broken heart, and Father, forgive them, they don't know what they do. And very often when the woman with the alabaster box, or the leper, or the blind man, and they just knew that they would have a shot with him, with God, Zacchaeus. This is amazing, because God, in the form of man, would express all of the best of our emotions could ever be in perfection. It's perfect compassion, not sentimentality. It's righteous anger, not retaliation. Right? It was every expression. It was pure joy, you know, and not malicious mockery. It was God, Christ had everything, and it was attractive. He was your friend. The Bible said he was a friend of publicans and sinners, and they knew it. He would eat with them. He was everything. And so for us, we are attracted to that. And that's important for us to know that God is those things. And we, even as he is, so are we. We can be these things. It's so important because we have to know that my emotional state is not one, no matter what condition it is at the moment, even if I feel captive, that this is not the way that it was meant to be, nor is it the way that it has to be. Because sometimes we can get locked up like, this will be the rest of my life, or this is how I am. And Christ was giving a picture and saying, listen, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. You mean the Father that was on Mount Sinai? Yeah, you've seen him. Philip said, show us the Father and it suffices us. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. You've seen everything. You mean that God that was up there on the mount is the same God that you are, that loves us? The Father himself loves you, Christ said. The Father himself. Like, this is it. This is all of it. There is no extra. Are you looking behind me or whatever? I am in the express image of God, and I am him to you. And that is, I need that, because that is what consoles me, that is what comforts me, that is what encourages me on a daily, hourly basis, to know that this is the same God who says, Latasha, be ye steady in your emotions. Be ye also like I am, like I was. And as you saw me, I understand what you're going through here, and it's possible for you to be like this. So Philippians 4, when Paul is speaking, it's not this list of the law of Mount Sinai, like of, you know, get it together and like it. You're gonna do this and like it. You know, every one of us has been in our families in that way. We're all going to go do this and like it. It's like, oh, great. You know, mom said we're going to like it, or, you know, whatever. We're going to do this. God isn't doing that. This list is not a laundry list of the law, but rather it's saying that, listen, as Christ was, so we can be. And this is what the Father has always been, had a heart toward you for. And this is what Christ was in the world, and this is who we can be. So he says, rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say, rejoice. He says, rejoice. I can rejoice. I can be happy. I can rejoice. And again, we said this is not something that is like, it's just instant, but actually it's a product. It's the right message, the right faith, the right hope. And the product is that I can agree with Paul, and I can rejoice in the Lord. I can rejoice in the Lord. Let your injustice, that's moderation, is be known to all men. The Lord is at hand. Then he says, be anxious for nothing. This chapter, in a lot of ways, is a chapter of emotions. proper emotions. Don't be careful for nothing. Be anxious for nothing. You know, not to let that take over me, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. Like, in this, it's very interesting because he says, rejoice. Listen, you're to have the God. This is a commandment of you. It's in you. And we said this Tuesday, it's in you to have this type of joy in the Lord. There's the answer. It's in you to not be anxious. Why? How can I stop that? By prayer and thankfulness. How can I stop my anxiety? By prayer and thankfulness and bringing these requests before God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will keep you. So how am I kept, God? How can I be kept? You'll be kept by this peace. Yeah, but how do I get this peace? You get this peace because by the things that you bring before me, by the prayer, by the thanksgiving, this is the way that it happens. And then finally he says, and what this is what I've been thinking about, whatsoever things are true, honest, lovely, just, pure, lovely, of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. Right meditation is right emotions. It's the battle of what I choose to meditate. Sometimes the enemy comes in like a flood. The scriptures tell us that. And everything kind of comes in. And we can know the instant it's there. It's overwhelming almost. And it's a frontal attack on our thinking, on our emotions, and it can be overwhelming for a few moments. Now, this is the way it works in warfare and battle. It can be like that. The enemy will come in with a frontal attack, and it seemingly overwhelms all of the forces of the opposing army. But it's just the initial attack. It's what we call the initial wave. It's not the full battle. It's not the full defeat. And if you watch it, it'll be like... And you can see that even in like in a wrestling match, and then it goes back. And what the enemy actually waits for is the response. They come with everything, but they know that actually all of this that they gave is not enough actually to win the battle. It shouldn't be enough, really. So they wait for the first response. The first response will throw them back, and then they're engaged. But we can sometimes take this frontal attack, and then we just but here's the thing, that frontal attack that hits me, that wants to recount maybe all of the day's events on why I'm a loser, or should be thinking about these horrible things, or the entire week, or why I'll never get ahead, or why I'll never be victorious here, that's just the first wave. When the enemy comes in like a flood, the Bible says the Lord raises a standard. You know, that's when the flag kind of goes up and they're like, oh, they're still alive. You know, that was happened. I mean, that's kind of the picture of the story we love to hear about on how our national anthem was written, right? Francis Scott Key, he's in the bottom of the boat, right? And he sees that tattered flag still waving as the barrage from the British are still attacking, right? And it's over at Fort McHenry, and it's like, or in the bottom of the fort, rather, over at Fort McHenry, and it seems like they could take no more, but they take it. And there, that flag is still up. See, our flag still stays up. And then that is not my, I don't meditate here. This is so important for us. My meditation is not, I mean, it can come like a wave and it can seem like it takes over my thought life, but it's no. It's kind of like it comes, it hits, and we can let it run its course. And I say this from time to time, like a roller coaster, let it run its course. But I am expecting, after this storm from the enemy, I'm expecting peace from God. Because greater is he that is in me than he is in the world. This frontal attack, it's an attack. Like, you can push Christ, you can even kill him, but really he will rise again. You know, the frontal attack can come, but it will not be my meditation. my meditation, you know, I may, you know, what is it, Isaiah 26:20, I may shut the door about me because this is, this time is while this indignation, while I receive all of this that goes on, I may shut the door about me for a little bit mentally. I may have this frontal attack. It seems like everything's hitting me. But there will always be this peace that comes. And the enemy knows it too. Because the enemy, you know, a lot of great stories where the enemy will throw everything in their silence right after that. A lot of big battles, the Battle of Waterloo, what have you, will have long periods, all day long, of nothing. And that's the thing. The frontal attack is there, but in that period right afterwards, that is the question of the moment. What will be my meditation? Now, I could spend all that time on the frontal attack. Listen, the frontal attack came. It's going to come. It's inevitable. But my meditation can be sweet. I can think on what's true and honest and just and lovely and virtuous and praiseworthy. I can think of these things. I can rejoice what? In the situation? No. In the Lord. I can rejoice in the Lord. The situation may have nothing to rejoice in it. In fact, if I were to start rejoicing in the situation, then maybe, it might even be considered absurd. It might even be considered insane to do so. Right? But that's not where my rejoicing is. My rejoicing is that this situation, no matter what happens, at the end of the day, I have not lost any of my standing with God. The rejoicing is very real because I've not lost anything. It's like taking the frontal attack and taking everything, right? Everything that the enemy's got to give, and the smoke clears. And you look around and your family's still there. You know, and you look around and you're still intact. Everybody okay? Yeah, we're here. We're here. We're here. And it's like, wow. I have much to rejoice about. You know, much is destroyed around me, but we are alive. We're here. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. We are alive. We are Habakkuk 3:17. You're like, these things can come against me. The fig tree may not blossom. You know, these things will come against me. I may not even be producing fruit. I was thinking about that. Jeremiah 17 says that we produce fruit in season, but the leaf doesn't turn. There's still a leaf. It's like, hey, there's a flag. I've got a leaf going here. No fruit, but I got a leaf. Meaning it is. I'm still alive. The leaf speaks of life. You know? And I can rejoice in that. And you know what? That's correct emotions. Correct emotions are not, woohoo, yeah, you know, whatever. Correct emotions are like the rejoicing in the truth. And internally, there's a no-so that nothing, you know, that everything's okay. It's the onslaught that has happened. There is a rejoicing that can occur. We know it. We taste it. We see it when it's something traumatic. All a building is caved in. We watch it on the news, right? And everybody is like, as horrific as what happened in Haiti, there were tears, right? But there were also tears of joy when you would hear story after story about this person who had lived, or you would hear this faint cry, still alive. And then they go and dig that person out, right? All of us, our hearts just were with them in that respect because it was devastating, but there was something to rejoice in. That's the thing, and that's proper emotion, is that there's a lot of devastation. Your entire life may feel like one big devastation, but what I'm saying is there is truth, and the truth is I cannot change the treasure. The gold was never mine. It was put in me. I am the treasure, and I cannot destroy it. So this is the truth, and nothing can separate me from God. Nothing. So I rejoice in the truth. I rejoice in the Lord always. And anxious for nothing. God's saying, listen. And you say, well, don't be anxious for anything. Yeah, but I get anxious. Right. And the Holy Spirit brings this back to me and says, listen, this is the moment where you can drop everything and let your requests, that's your supplication, and thank me, and I guarantee you I can release you. This is the moment. I can do this for you. If you let me, I can do this. And think on these things. And if this is my meditation, and this is my way out, this is the pathway for me for good emotions. It's very important for me. And then, you know, the last thing I want to say is that is actually, it's hidden in this chapter, so to speak, not entirely hidden, but to understand that this is Paul writing, this. A lot of times we stop there, but actually this chapter must continue. He said, those things which you have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do, and the God of peace will be with you. Okay? He says, do these things. That which you have learned, you've received, you've heard and seen, you do, and I guarantee you, he's like, you can set your watch to it, you can write a check to it, and the God of peace will be with you. Do them. Joshua observed to do all of the commandments and that Moses had honored, and he had success. But what is the do? And we get a picture of it. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at the last your care of me has flourished again, wherein you were also careful, but you lacked opportunity. Now, that's what the thing is. That is the last point of this section that I've never really put together. It begins in verse 1, and to me, for this particular point, it ends in verse 10. And it's the last do, and that is the right works. That is, like we're talking about, the right thinking, the right meditation. It's the last thing, it's the do. Paul says two things in this very section. He says, your care of me. That honestly, I cannot have right emotions. I cannot have what I want, spiritually speaking, that life that Christ has. Christ had a lot of that life because of what he did, not just because of who he was. He didn't walk around from town to town with 11 guys and saying, stay close. Don't even look at them. Heathens. Wicked. Drunkards. You know, we don't get that picture, right? You know, that was the Pharisees. You know, he didn't go through town finger pointing. Never did. He was where the publicans and sinners were. He was noticing the Zacchaeus in the tree. He was going to where they're at. And there's this picture that we have here that in all reality, it's not about just who I am, but who I am is important. My meditation, that's key. That really keeps the inside right, but the inside must have an outlet. And he says here, I rejoice greatly. Two things are in this verse. One is, and we get a picture. Paul says, I rejoiced. Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. I rejoiced in the Lord greatly. Verse 1, he said, you are my joy and my crown. This is interesting. He said, I rejoiced in the Lord greatly, and you're my joy. So it wasn't just rejoice in the Lord, praise the Lord, brother, Sunday morning, we love it, rejoice in it. And like everything I said is true earlier about all these incredible things happening, and we need to know that nothing has changed. But God is giving us a little, the Holy Spirit is giving us a little look into a secret here. He's saying joy is there, but joy is also here in what you do. Because Paul had given of his life very much to the Philippians, had taught them, had been with them, had loved them, and so he received joy from them because of that, from his ministry to them. He received joy from his ministry to them. So you are my joy, you are my crown. So he received joy from it. That's the to do. Christ wasn't doing it because he didn't get it to the end of the day and go, okay, how many were healed from blindness? 500. Okay, that's good. You know, it was not a quota for him. The Bible says that he walked from town to town. And, you know, people, he was so full of virtue that a woman with an issue could just touch him and he wouldn't even have to notice it because it was so oozing out of him. It was almost incidental. It was so supernatural, it was natural. It was the way he walked about the earth. Like, he looked everywhere, loved everyone. It was in what he did. Paul says, I rejoice. You're my joy. You're my crown. What do I get a charge out of? He's saying, this is the joy I get a charge out of. I'm in prison right now, and I got to tell you that I feel like I have everything I need emotionally when I think of your lives. When I think of the ministry that I've had to you, but more, and because I'm saying that you, what you, meaning like I'm happy in the ministry I've had to you, that if you do that ministry, I mean, if you do what I've ministered to you, that God of peace will rule your hearts. He'll be there. He'll be with you. Secondly, I'm excited because you're now responding and I get to see it, that now at last your care of me has flourished again. It's like, this is great. This is another joy for me. He said, now I understand you were careful, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I'm in need of anything, but because I've learned to be content. I'm content, but man, am I joyful. You know, I am so joyful. No greater joy that I have than to know that my children walk in truth. It's like, this is amazing. I really have joy here. This is what I have joy in this. And you know what? You will have joy the same way. This is what, because if you do what you've learned and received and heard and seen, the God of peace will be with you. And these, you will sit in these shoes one day. And you will also have this kind of joy. For us, it's the secret for healthy emotions is also in not just what we receive, but in also what we give. And I'm thinking a lot this week on this verse that there is a great and effectual door that's been opened, or a great door that's been opened, and that but there are many adversaries, and that there's a big door. And there, but you know, it's like it's the door for a Christian that would lead to a real life. You know, I was reading a little bit of The Great Divorce by C.S. Lewis, and the one picture there, you know, is this whole idea. Actually, no, that's not what I want to talk about. Although he does talk about joy and how people can despise even that joy, but I'm actually thinking of something else. But there is a big door, and that big door is interesting because it is it's a very small door and a narrow door, but through that door is our life. And and I would almost say it, there's like a room. There's two doors. The first door you enter, the second door you leave. The first door is the door of salvation, and we all walk into the room. And I would say that most of Christianity sits in this big room. And everyone's comfortable here. Lots of chairs. It's comfortable. It's like a lot of light in it, and good people. You know, it's kind of like a church where you left your purse, but you don't worry, because why? You're at church. Okay? So, it's church. Your little kids run around, we smile. Why? Because you're at church. Now, if they were in the supermarket, you'd be chasing those kids around. But now, you know, no one's going to let that little boy or girl run outside the door. Everyone's going to love that little child, and they're not going to let them do what they shouldn't do or what have you. It's a family because it's church. And we have that in this big room that everyone came in, and everyone comes to the door, and we're delighted. There's always room for more, you know. And when they get through the door, it's exciting. Bible says all of heaven rejoices when people get through the door. But the interesting thing is that most of us can stay right there in that room. But the second door, the second one, is another glory that many, many will never see in a lifetime. Because that is the first one is I will work on, you know, my meditation, my trials, we commiserate, everything I said earlier. But the second one is a glory that the world can't even hold a candle to, and much of Christianity will not understand. There's a glory that comes through going through that second door, but it's a cost. But the second door, the ones who go through the second door, are responsible for the people coming through the first door. They're responsible for them. They have their work. There's a work about them. They are involved in the work of God. And so their joy comes from that. And one could say, oh, why don't you sit down and hang out here, whatever. And they said, I can't. I'm busy. Yeah, but I mean, that's a lot of work. Why not just hang here? Oh, I love the work. The Son of Man did not walk the earth and say, okay, whew. All right, got to go heal some more people tomorrow. Let me get a good night's sleep because they just keep coming at me. You know, we don't get that. If we did, that's horrific, right? How untreatable. That would be more closer to the Mount Sinai. But when Christ walked the earth, there was something inviting about him every step of the way, to the point where we would have to reject him. It was never about him rejecting us. So Christ walked the earth, and there was no rejection in him. But there was no, like, I got to do this. It was his delight to do this. With great desire, I desired to supper with you, to eat with you, to just be. There was never any point where he felt uncomfortable where he was, because he'd rather be a better place. And there's something that is there, and... you see, I don't have to leave the living room. That's the thing. That's kind of like that door is right there, this other door. But I actually don't have to leave the living room. Because God is always a great host. And though he would like those to join him into the highways and to the byways, though he would like those to rejoice with him, actually, those who go through that door, they enter into a partnership with him. They become a co-worker with him. They become helpers of other people's joy, because they become the reason other people are in the room. It's an amazing thing, but God will never, you know, he doesn't open that door and start kicking other Christians through it. He just doesn't do it. Although, there are times when those who are in just ready there, he may give them a little nudge called persecution, and has a unique way of spreading the gospel. It's amazing how it spreads. It happened in Jerusalem, and that's how we got the church in Antioch. It was because of the persecution that came to the Christians in the first church. But so it has a way of doing it, but I'm saying on a personal level, ladies, we actually never have to. But we could. We could. It's almost like, you know, there's a certain thing that I despise, and I know you love my sports analogies, so you're going to get one. But it's the player who's okay with earning a paycheck. There are teams, I mean, they're thinking we're making the big bucks, and they are. And they're the middle of the road. They're happy with that. And so they're on your team, and you just know that they're going to be, they're good enough to be there every season. They're not going to be special, but they're good. No one, they're not really worried about, you know, losing their job, because they're good. You know, they're talented. They're not the best, but, you know, but they're good enough. And for a coach, it can be infuriating if you want to win. And for a team, it can be infuriating. Because if you want to win. But if an entire team like does that, like I think our Orioles are not so far away from that. Everybody just loves, they're going to go watch baseball game whether they win or lose, and these guys know that. So it's kind of like that, you know. It's like I'm sitting at the table. I'm here. The food is always going to be spread for me. I never have to worry about it. So why would I leave the house and go into the cold? Why would I go and chance being rejected by other people? Unless, and again I say this, Paul knew a secret. How do you start off by saying my joy? People think that other Christians who go out there, that, you know, well, you're rejected or whatever, there's something you're not getting. It's kind of like, why would I increase my workouts daily? Why would I go for more? Why would I go through that pain unless there was something more I was going for and I actually could get? My joy and my crown. He says, you know, I rejoice greatly. I worry so much about these other little joys and how come there's not enough joy in my life. I just wish I could be happy. And it's like I'm groveling. It's like I have a great father, but I find myself almost begging as if I've never been fed. You've seen that? Your parents are embarrassed. You find out that's happened. That they're, you know, when I would teach, you know, you find out parents will come in or you meet with the parents and say, you know, Johnny doesn't seem to be have. Is there a problem at home financially because he doesn't have money for lunch or what have you? And the parents are embarrassed because Johnny has plenty of money or Johnny has plenty of whatever, but for some reason, and you know the reasons are long, he's not using what his family has. It's an embarrassment. And so we can do the same. It's an embarrassment to God the Father because this Christian, we don't have joy. We are not known. We are embarrassing the Father because we actually don't have this thing that Paul has. And why? Mainly because we've never stepped into this other part. We've never learned this particular glory, this particular joy that has been that is a gift to every Christian. Because all we can see is the cost. But we can't see the glory. We can't see the joy. And so God has like an invitation to us. And he really wants us. And for the rest of our lives, he's never going to stop having that invitation. Like it's almost like that door is always available to us. But no one will be forced. And I can, you know, this I have this here. And maybe I can show my face to the world as if I'm not getting even fed enough there. But in all reality, this is God the Father. This is God the Creator. And he is more than able to take care of his children. He has never had a child he could never take care of. He has never had a child who he couldn't properly provide for. But this is the way. It's the pathway, and it begins with, like I said, whatever I'm taking in, my understanding, right faith, right hope, right message, these things going on, rejoicing in these things, prayerfully, not anxious, meditation, and I have the right outcome. And that is the beginning for me. It is the beginning of that. But, you know, light is sown for the righteous and gladness for the upright in heart. You know, this it's the beginning. It is the seed, and there is gladness through that open door for each one of us. So it's a kind of, because really, our Christianity was meant to be more than just theological or philosophical. It was meant to be lived, and it was meant to be something expressed. And if I don't have an expression, if I don't have, you know, a lot of people, oh, I'm good at this. Well, can you show me? I must have a way to express it. Or I have this. And I find that you will find that there is much more. There is the much more involved if you're able to express.